Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about self-confidence. And you know, we announced the topic early. We announced it beforehand. And I got some lovely quotes and some lovely comments about self-confidence. And I was going to read a quote that Hussein sent in. And it's from the man who founded the Whole Earth Catalog. He is, well, he's quite successful. And the Whole Earth Catalog was kind of a new concept at the time. I think it's worldwide, but in the United States especially, it's quite popular. It's organics, and he kind of started the movement to go more towards natural, right? Right. His name is Stuart Brand, and Hussein sent this quote in, and I think it's very good. Stuart Brand says, "The formula for an interesting life is skills. Acquire them and use them. The more skills, the more interesting you become. Skills automatically give us pride and confidence. Skills also help us to feel competent and powerful, especially when we can use them to accomplish personally meaningful goals." Isn't that cool? Yeah. Yeah, people are saying I want to repeat it so that we can really think about it. Okay. And also, you know, of course, that you can re-listen to the quote by going to recipeforpeacenow.com after we get off the air, and it'll be the first archived radio show. Right? Right. Yeah. Yeah, they're all archived there. Now we've gone to a click-the-link type thing. It's just neater. We've been doing this show for years, and there's just a ton of them. So it's kind of like, oh, that's nice. So here he is. Stuart Brand, who's the founder of Whole Earth Catalog, says, "The formula for an interesting life is skills. Acquire them and use them. The more skills, the more interesting you become. Skills automatically give us pride and confidence. Skills also help us to feel competent and powerful, especially when we can use them to accomplish personally meaningful goals." Yeah. It's kind of a concise way of putting it, isn't it? Yes. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to be talking about self-confidence and what types of leadership skills do we need to acquire the self-confidence in our abilities that we will need to be effective leaders. Yeah. So self-confidence is really leadership skills, right? And what type of leadership skills do we need to acquire? Oh, I see there's lots of people. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for your input. You know what? I agree. And I'm going to say that the main topic that people are talking about, the main skills that we need to acquire are people skills, right? Yeah. We need to be able to know how to handle our participants. How to handle our group, how to help lead them through the process, which we need to understand ourselves, right, to a successful outcome, to reach their goals. Yeah. And that, of course, will make them interesting people, too, because then they will acquire skills also. And people do know that. People understand that it is important and that they are actually getting a benefit and acquiring new skills. And there's nothing better than that. Nothing better than people knowing that we've really accomplished something. This is fabulous. Yeah. And so the new skills are something that everyone will understand and everyone will go, yeah, that's That's really good. Yeah, I'm so glad. Mm-hmm. So what kind of leadership skills, what kind of people skills do we need? Mm-hmm. You know what? I think number one, and I am so pleased, because it means that we have lots and lots of people who have actually been listening. Thank you so much, and welcome to everyone. Let's go through the areas that we're going to talk about, and then talk about them one by one, like we often do. The first area that a lot of people are talking about, Brody and a whole bunch of other people, and Hikaru, are talking about enforcing the civility rules. Mm-hmm. That's the first leadership skill that we need to have to build our self-confidence and have, you know, it's not only our self-confidence, it's the confidence that our participants have in us as leader, right? Yeah. And we've talked about leadership and the participant confidence that we can do it, that they'd like to follow us. And we've talked about that in prior shows too. RecipeForPeaceNow.com. They're archived there. Yes? Under global broadcast, by the way. I've gotten several questions about where's the radio show. It's under global broadcast on the website. The website got kind of changed around a smidge just because it was holding too many shows kind of fully, and we, I don't know, ran out of room, but the web mistress said that we should make it a little more compact. It's kind of like, oh, really? Yes. So just click on the link and then scroll down. But, yeah, so prior shows we've talked about that, and our participants need to have confidence in our abilities. And we need to project self-confidence so that they can, right? Right, yeah. So we're going to enforce the civility rules. What else are we going to do? Hikaru and others are talking about assertion of authority. And that's a different area, but it's kind of related. Let's do also empathy, right? We need to be able to have some empathy with our people skills to help with our self-confidence and our skills. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to call this understanding the group dynamic, right? Yeah, we need to be able to make a team out of these disparate people. Yes, make a team out of people who don't understand they have common goals, don't understand that they need to work together so we can all succeed. Yes. So that's going to be, I think, our four topics. Hopefully we'll get to the recipes. A lot of times we don't, and I apologize, because we have such wonderful discussions. Now, okay, our first self-confidence builder, the first thing we need the skills for, so we have the self-confidence to lead, we've called that enforce the civility rules. Now, for those of you who are new, and welcome to everyone, these civility rules are really the only rules that Recipe for Peace Now has, and at their core, at their base, the civility rules say we will not be rude to one another. Yes, we will treat each other with respect, and that everyone will be treated in a respectful, polite, non-rude manner, because everyone in our group is of value, and everyone's opinion is valued. Yes. And that's sometimes easier said than done. And it does. It depends. I'm going to say it depends. I know you guys say I say that a lot. But it depends on your group, on whether or not they are really of one mind and they just don't know how to get there, which is why you're leading, or they're very different and they have to understand that their interests coalesce, that their interests are the same. Yeah? And that's the trick. You have to make them understand that so that we can all go forward, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So enforcement of the civility rules. How do we do that? Mm-hmm. Nico and others, and yes, this is always true, say that the main recent way to enforce the civility rules is by being a good example. You must be. You are the leader. You have civility rules that you're telling people about. Sometimes you have to tell them outright. Sometimes they're implicit. If you've got the kind of a group on your hands where you have to think about enforcing the civility rules, you need to tell them outright. Yes. You might even need to create a written list and pass it around. That's up to you, because that is a little bit different. You know what I mean? You have to decide if that's something that needs to be done or we don't really need it. It's going to be implied. You know, sometimes it's insulting to say this to the individuals out loud if they're doing it, right? You have to, that's a people skill. You have to think about your individual participants, right? Right. So, but being a good example is always important. We're human. We get irritated. You can't show it. You cannot enforce the civility rules by violating the civility rules, right? Yeah. You can't get nasty about enforcing the civility rules. You've breached them. That's our rule, not to be rude to each other. You can't be rude to anybody or sarcastic or yell at them or something awful like that. Mm-mm-mm. Our job is to model the civility rules, yes. And it's a skill that takes some practice, right? Mm-hmm. For some people more than others. And I like to think, well, okay, yeah, it's true. People are saying that you either have the kind of nature that you can do that or you kind of lose your temper. You know, that can be trained, though. Let's not lose our temper. Let's be calm. I am of the three deep breaths variety, right? Three deep breaths before you speak and think about how it is that that's going to come out. And if you're taking three deep breaths and thinking about it, it's going to come out poorly. Right? Right. And you know it in your heart. I mean, you really do. You've got the people skills to understand that if you say it like that, or you lose your temper, or you yell, it's not, you're not modeling the civility rules. Yes, a lot of people are asking, and I won't name who. A lot of people are asking, what happens if you accidentally breach the civility rules? You accidentally are not a good example. It just happens. You know, if you get more experience, it won't happen. But, yeah, sometimes things just happen. And you know it right away, right? You know, phooey, I just shouldn't have done that. What happens when that, what should you do when that happens, right? It's lack of experience, it's lack of sleep. It's irritation from the people before, it's irritation from these people before. You have breached the civility rules. And yes, people are saying you've stood in the middle and yelled, shut up. It happens to the best of us. When that happens and you know that you have been a non-good example, you take three deep breaths, you smile, because smiling always helps, and you explain about the civility rules, you apologize for accidentally breaching them, because if somebody in you do what you want your participants to do, if they breach the civility rules, right? Right, it's part of the rules. So you do it. You model what it is that you do if you've accidentally been uncivil. Yeah, you model it. You're the good example. You apologize. You explain what you're apologizing for, about the civility rules. You take three deep breaths. You put out your hand to the person that you just yelled at and shake their hand if you are sure that they'll shake it back. And you promise that you won't do it again. And you go forward in a civil manner. Yes, because setting being a good example and modeling includes the oopses, includes the ones where you go, oh, oop. So annoying. But we're going to go forward. Yes, it's very important. It's very important to be able to take those three deep breaths and go, whoops. We're okay. We really are. We're okay. We're going to go forward. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you enforce the civility rules by being a good example, and you might have to be a good example of whoops. Mm-hmm. Yes, a lot of people are talking about enforcing civility rules consistently. You must enforce them the same for everybody. Otherwise, you are no longer the third party impartial. You've taken a side, right? And consistently is very important. You have to do it all the time. A rule's a rule. It's not like, well, this time we'll let it slide because. There is no because about the let it slide. No. We are always civil. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good point that Dalman and others are making, that you need to also always enforce the civility rules, not only consistently, fairly across the board to everyone, but you have to enforce them immediately. It's too late after you've already let it slide and it will get worse. Animosity will get worse. It is too late to try to enforce the civility rules when you've already not been doing them. You need to really do them. You need to do them consistently. You need to do them fairly, right? Consistently, fairly. And you need to do them immediately. The first time you make the speech about what the civility rules are, about lack of rudeness, and you fill in the blank of whatever it is that's happening, right? Make it specific. And then you enforce them from there. Mm-hmm. People are asking, if I force people to apologize when they break the civility rules, that's tricky. It's tricky because you want to be sure they will. Does that make any sense? Yes. You can do it. I don't disapprove of it. But you have to be sure that they won't fight with you and that you can get them to do it, right? It's a judgment call. It's a judgment call. I don't usually publicly force the handshake thing. It's been my experience that there's an excellent chance, because people are still heated up, right, that'll backfire, right? I do sometimes act like a kindergarten teacher and separate the people that are fighting and kind of get in between, excuse me, and cool the situation down. Pardon me. Let me take a sip of water. Pardon me, my voice is going. That's different. I don't usually force any kind of public display. If it works and they do it, I don't see the real benefit. Apologies, fine. You have to touch each other, shake hands. I don't necessarily enforce making an apology. As long as they quit and mutter something about sorry, even if it's the sorriest to me, because it usually is. I don't like to start something I can't finish. And it's been my experience that forcing an actual apology is kind of a bad idea, if you know what I mean. It's not... It doesn't usually work. Well, there's a good chance it won't work. And if it doesn't work, it's a lot worse than not having tried that. Does that make sense? Yeah, that's why. It's because if it doesn't work, it's going to be ugly. And if it does work, well, you haven't really accomplished that much. Yeah, I think I'm not in favor. But you know, I'm going to say it depends again. It depends on the situation. If you are standing there as leader and you've got your self-confidence and your skills, and you think it would be a, it needs to end and start anew, if you know what I mean, then go for it. Yeah, I'm not against it exactly. I don't usually try to force people to do kind of a fake apology thing when they're still mad and shake hands and stuff. Kind of dicey. Okay, so we need to be consistent and immediate and set a good example. Mm-hmm. Jasmine and others are talking about building the civility rules into the process. Yes, we certainly do. We've talked about this, about actually having people have the same amount of time to speak. Mm-hmm. And it is an important civility rule, important to do that, to have people have the same amount of time to speak, same amount of time to provide their opinions, right? Yeah. And I personally, and I know that you guys do different things because we've talked about it, and I know some of you like to like blow a whistle or something like that. I actually, if we've got a lot of people that need to give their opinion and need to speak, I like to show that everybody has the same amount of time by not actually having someone physically keep the time, because they could cheat, right? They could. Everybody feels they didn't have their fair share. I use a cooking timer, the kind that go tick, 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 tick. It sits on the desk, on a tabletop, and then when the 3 minutes or whatever it is up, it goes ding, and everybody knows they've had their fair share, right? And you can see the thing and see how much time you've got left. So it's kind of self-enforcing, and that shows everybody that it's equal. And that's building it into the process. I do that all the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, people are talking about preventing animosity by switching membership, switching people around, making subcommittees, smaller teams, so that we don't, and kind of being careful of who we put on them, so that we don't have animosity. Jasmine says that that's a good way to prevent cliques, and it is. If you see that you've got some people that have come in together, they are sticking together. They are sitting together, and they are promoting a point of view together. You might want to divide the group, them especially, into different teams to go do some research, to go be a think tank and bring it back to the group, because it breaks the we're solid against the rest of the participants idea. And that's what a clique is, right? It's a small group within the group who are exclusionary to the others. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that needs to be enforced right away. It also breaches the civility rules. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the next topic, or we are not even going to get through our conversation. And that's assertion of authority. That has to do with the civility rules, right? Yeah, you establish the civility rules in your enforcement. Yes, Haley and others are talking about the fact that that's what you do when you consistently enforce the civility rules. You're establishing your leadership authority because you are the enforcer. You're the one that calls time, so to speak, right? Yeah. So you're establishing your authority in that way. Mm-hmm. Yes, Thomas and others are talking about transparency. I am very big on transparency. It's very important. Transparency to me as a leader is really explaining the process, not only right up front, but as we go along, to explain to people why it is that we're doing it this way, right? Yeah. I think it's very important. You have to remember that you've done it, I don't know, 100 times. You've seen this dance. You understand the process backwards and forwards because you're the leader. You're the one with the experience and the skills. But your participants, it's new to them. They don't know what to expect. They don't know how it goes. They don't know how it's supposed to go. They don't know how to get to the next step. If they knew these things, they wouldn't need you to be the leader, right? Right. So you need to constantly be aware of the fact that you got to tell people stuff that you think is obvious. But it is not. And it wasn't obvious to you the first time either, right? And naturally, transparency. Why are we doing this? What's the next step? What are we going to do? How will we approach this, right? Yeah. I like to tell it right up front. Mm-hmm. Ellen and others are talking about developing trust so that you can assert authority because people trust you and respect you, right? Yeah. And that's, you know, it's very important, and it always was, because I've been doing this before the internet. I've been an attorney nearly 35 years. I was a child when I became an attorney, just saying. And, well, yes, I really was young. It is very important that your participants trust you. They trust you when you tell them stuff. They trust that you will not in some way double-cross them, in some way impair their abilities because somebody else has made you a better offer, right? It is so, I can't even stress this big enough. In Ellen and others, we've got a lot of agreement today. It is so, a leader as an authority, you won't be able to enforce your authority if you don't, as a good example of everything. It is so important that you always keep your word. So very important. You won't be a leader long if you don't keep your word. I mean, I've seen people, they are the most horrible, obnoxious people. They tell one person something and then another person something else, and then they pit them against each other. And they have so much fun. But they are not going to last as a leader. It'll be short term. It'll be horrible. But it won't last because you can't run business like that. You simply cannot. I mean, it looks like that's going, but it's not. If they are the leader and they are the owner, not going to be successful. Really not in the not even in the short term, but maybe in the short term, but not in the long term for sure. They will have a terrible reputation. And nobody will work for them. You have to develop trust. You also have to always keep your word. Always. Before the internet, word got around about stuff. And it was kind of, oh, that's, you know, but that wasn't really, people weren't sure. But now that the internet exists, but word got out if you were untrustworthy. Now that the internet exists, word gets out double. And then people lie, yeah. And then other people have to attest to you. I have a reputation built over many years. If I give you my word on something, if I tell you I'll do something, I will keep my word. Even though legally we didn't write it down, we didn't really put it on a piece of paper and it can't be legally enforced, I will keep my word even if circumstances change and it's not to my actual benefit anymore. Yeah, and people know it. And it's very, very important. Very important to always keep your word. Your reputation depends on it. And if you don't have a good reputation, you will not be successful. You're going to really fail. And so it is very, very important to keep your word. And then people will understand that your reputation is excellent. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So keeping your word, very important. Reputation for impartiality also. Yes, good point, Anthony and others are making. That you need to have a reputation that you will be impartial. You will not bring your very humanness to bear, and then people will not, and you will not color what you do, your thinking, in an impartial manner. Now, we're all humans, and we all have an opinion, let's face it. But that opinion is private. We want to be impartial, and we want to be able to say that we can see all sides, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're talking about enforcement of our authority, assertion of our authority. Quite a few people, Grace and others, are talking about cultural differences. And yes, that does come into play. Some groups, oftentimes because of a cultural bent, some groups really, really, really want you to assert more authority than others. Now, in the United States, we see a lot of groups, and I do multicultural, multinationals, we see a lot of groups that want to be kind of democratic. They want you to be the referee, so to speak. They want you to lead by encompassing, by being part of the group, just the one who tells us when it's to take the next step. But they want to discuss everything, lots. It's kind of the democratic process, right? They want to really think about stuff. They want to discuss it. They want to open the floor to everybody. Some groups, and you have to make this as a judgment call because it's part of your skill set, right? They are not used to that. You're the leader. They want you to lead, right? You're the leader. They want you to lead. They don't want to put the whole thing up for discussion. They want you to tell them what to do, for heaven's sakes, right? Yeah. And that is a that's a good style too. But you have to be flexible. You have to be able to have the skill set to say, look, I understand that. This is what we'll need to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you need to be able to culturally accommodate, as people are saying. And you have to think about that too. Some cultures have different ways of resolving issues. Some cultures really don't want to hardly, some groups really don't hardly want to talk about it at all. They just want you to tell them what to do. And you have to kind of draw them out like a think tank to see what the various options are, right? Yeah. Are those easier? People are saying those are easier groups. I don't know if they are or not. I don't know if that's easier or not because, okay, it makes easier in the sense that it's less time-consuming and messy, I suppose. But it also puts the burden of decision squarely on the leader. Depends what we're deciding, really, kind of, yeah? Yes. And, it puts the burden of the decision on us, on you. And it depends if that's okay. I kind of do. I guess I've gotten used to the discussion once. But I can lead the other way, too, lead very definitely. Sometimes, yes. A lot of times I'm called in, well, a lot of us probably are, when a group has already been paralyzed. They've been in existence, they have been working on it, their leader is not real good, and they're not getting anywhere, or they've gone to animosity, right? Which is going to be our next topic, which we're going to talk about empathy and understanding, right? This group has failed, it is failing, it hasn't failed yet, because we've just built up animosity and they're not making it to a successful outcome. And I've been brought in to fix it, to change it around, to make sure that we actually come to a reasonable, viable conclusion and we can do something together. This is when you have to assert your authority, especially at the beginning. Mm-hmm. New sheriff in town, that would be me, and we're going to change this, right? Yeah. New sheriff in town means we did it before. Right, right. Mm-hmm. Which leads us to our next topic, right? And our next one's going to be, we've talked about having empathy as a people skill to bolster our self-confidence, right? If we have lots of skills, we have greater self-confidence as a leader. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to work on having empathy. Mm-hmm. And we hope, because it's good for our self-confidence, that our participants have empathy for us, right? And for the other participants. Yes. Yes. Very important. And so we're going to have empathy. And remember, ladies and gentlemen, that empathy is understanding, not agreement. You do not have to agree with someone to have empathy. Empathy is understanding. You don't understanding why, understanding where they've come from, understanding why they hold that opinion. It is not necessarily agreement. Mm-hmm. Yes. How should we get empathy? I'm so pleased that Maram and others are talking about the 5W questions. Yes. The 5 W's, who, what, where, when, and why. I ask these questions all the time, and I'm certain that you do too, because they're part of our skill set, part of our self-confidence as leaders questions, and elicit a useful comment, not just a shrug of the shoulders, right? Right. Because we want to know. We need to have empathy. We need to have understanding. We need to know why it is that this participant is so set on this, really thinks this is true. It seems to us oftentimes that it's nuts. Yeah, but we can't say that. We're impartial. And we follow the civility rules. Mm-hmm. Three deep breaths. Who, what, where, when, and why? We need to know how come. We need to know if this is some sort of preconceived notion that is not personal to the person, for example. It is bigotry. Yes, we're calling it bigotry. I suppose we can. I don't like to use labels like that. But sometimes you've got someone with a very strong preconceived notion, and it's not exactly theirs. It was bequeathed to them by someone whom they respect, by a cultural leader, by someone who has ingrained it in them, a family member, a religious leader, someone who they listen to, who their family listens to, who they've chosen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's not, and when, you know, when you get down to the who, what, where, when, and why, and they really have to think about it, you can explain that without giving up their dearly held beliefs, because it is not our job to change them intrinsically, we're not psychiatrists, for this particular time, at this particular moment, with these particular people, let's modify that to fit the situation, right? People will be willing to do that when you get down to the who, what, where, when, and why. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, for everything. People are talking about religious feelings, religious faith, which is, of course, a belief in miracles and things. All religions have that. If faith is like that, and it's deep, and it's dearly held, and you don't want it questioned. I confess that I feel sensitive about that too. And it is true that if you question somebody's faith on its face, yeah, atheists of the world, it does. All of them have their moments of, that doesn't make a whole bunch of sense. But that doesn't mean it doesn't, right? Yeah, very important. Mm-hmm. Yes, you need to be able to get to the 5W questions without breaching the civility rules, right? Yes. Nakia says, non-judgmental, even if you are being judged. You have to appear to be non-judgmental. Yeah. We all have our private thoughts. We're people. But as Nakia says, you need to appear to be non-judgmental and have the self-confidence to project that, even if you kind of are being judged. Right? Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, Ken and others and Suki are talking about that we need to recognize and control our own preconceived notions. Mm-hmm. We have to pass the who, what, where, when, and why test ourselves so that we can have the self-confidence to go forward with other people. Right. Yes, it's good for everybody. It's not just for our participants. We need to be able to pass the test. We need to be able to say, I think I've got a preconceived notion, and I will be non-judgmental. Mm-hmm. And I won't let my preconceived notion judge your preconceived notion. Yes, we have to pass the civility rules and the 5W test too. Mm-hmm. Suki says that you look at the individual participants and acknowledge the life influences. Yes, you look at the individual participants and acknowledge their life influences. You can acknowledge that they've got a leader that they are following. You can acknowledge that you respect that. You can acknowledge that you're not violating it. You're not trying to change them or violate something. You're just going forward. And that's the ticket. That's the idea. That's the way to be impartial, to have empathy, which we need for our own self-confidence. And quite frankly, our participants need to have empathy not only for the other participants, but for us too. We're all in this together, right? Mm-hmm. And our self-confidence as leader bolsters the self-confidence of our participants because they feel comfortable. They feel assured that things are going to work out, right? This is a very wonderful thing and a very important to feel that you're going to really succeed. You're going to go forward. It's going to be fine. Yeah. Uh-huh. That is really bolstering. And it goes all directions, self-confidence like that. Yes. So you need to understand that. And the last thing, and we are, I'll try to leave 5 minutes. For the recipes. We're running out of time again. But I know you guys would like to get to one of them. People are saying things like, could you just put the recipe online if you've got it forever and ever and you haven't gotten to it? I'm going to try to get to the bean casserole. Really, I will. Okay, here we go. Even if we go a little over time. Because it's been on the books for a while. You guys are right. Yes. Okay, so the next topic, the last topic that we decided to discuss, is going to be self-confidence about understanding the group dynamic. Yeah, the self-confidence to really be able to understand what's going on. And we've got the individuals have their issues, and that's why we have the civility rules and empathy and leadership skills. But what you're really dealing with is them as a group, not really them as individuals so much, but them as a group. And the group itself has a dynamic, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what do you do? How do you get to the group dynamic? How do you know how it's going is the key to it? And I get asked this a lot because we talk about the group dynamic and about kind of judging it and understanding whether or not which kind of leadership skills that we have, because we have self-confidence, which leadership skills need to be pulled out when, so to speak. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's a very important point, pardon me, that you need to know how it's going, which leadership skills we're going to use, right? and how we're going to assess what's going on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So understand them. Muhammad and others are saying that the way to judge the group dynamic is to watch and listen. Yes, we're going to watch the body language. We're going to watch the interaction between our participants. We're going to listen to what they say, not only the words, but the tone in which it is said and to whom it is said, right? We need to be constantly vigilant as leaders that our group is moving forward, that we are progressing down the process lane so that we can get to our successful outcome. And that's watching and listening. Mm-hmm. Yes, and how do we do this? Talking about how do we get the experience. I think it's very important to gain some experience on the outside, especially if you're kind of new to it. Join some other groups as a participant. It's very enlightening. Because, of course, the participants talk to each other without you, the leader, right? Yeah. Join some groups that are handling similar or maybe even completely different areas and be a participant. Really listen to how a group dynamic is made. Maybe join a group for somebody that you respect the leadership. Sometimes it's even interesting to be in a group where the leadership is not so hotsy-totsy because it's interesting to see how the group participants react, right? It's kind of like looking at being on the other side. I like to do that. I think it's terribly interesting. Yeah, nowadays I don't do it so much because I don't have time. But it's terribly interesting to see a group dynamic at work, right? To really understand what it is that we're talking about here. Yeah. And it's terribly interesting to know because it'll build your skills, your self-confidence, to not to be the leader, but to be one of the participants and see how it feels. See how what the other participants think. See what the leader does to bring the group together, right? And see if it's effective. Very interesting, yeah. Mm-hmm. Manuel and a lot of people are also talking about go and do role play, R-O-L-E. That's when you do kind of hypothetical scenarios. We do it when we prep for court, for example, where somebody who's really yours on your side plays devil's advocate, as they say. They play the other side, and they ask a bunch of tough questions so that you can formulate a response, right? And it's good practice. Because when you get to the real thing, there's going to be a lot of tough questions and you have to be prepared and really have thought about it and not get so rattled, can't go on, right? Yeah. We do that especially. It's not to change anybody's mind or give them a form thing to say. We do it especially and without telling people this, but we do it especially if in our experience and our self-confidence as leaders, we think that perhaps a witness or a party will come off to a jury or to a judge as unsure, not because they're not sure, but because they will get rattled by the experience. They'll get kind of stage fright. Does that make sense? Yeah. It's really to bolster self-confidence. I've practiced. I've had role play. Oh, it's the big day. I'm a little nervous, but I can handle this because I've been prepared, right? Yeah. And that's what role play really does. It prepares you for the tough questions. It also makes you think about all sides about the issues, right? Yeah, it makes you think. And quite frankly, thinking is a mighty valuable thing. Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. So role play. Work it out. Act it out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Yes, some people are talking about seeing your participants not as stereotypes, but as individuals. And if you do that, most people will rise to the occasion and not act like the stereotype. They will. Surprisingly enough, they really will. People will surprise you and rise to the occasion. Okay, we've got about 5 minutes. We're going to do one of the recipes because you guys like it. And it is true that Bean Casserole has been wandering around on my We're Going to Talk About That promise list for a while, because we've had so many fabulous discussions that we haven't gotten to the recipes. So here we go. This is, well, oh, yes, thank you. People are saying you haven't done your little speech about food. And, yes, it's very important. If you're going to have food, and you are, because it is a tool, not just is it delicious, but it's a tool to bring people together and to keep them in the same room, to keep them talking to each other, right? Yeah, the recipe, the food is a tool. It allows us to have a time out, to have a break. It allows the leader to maybe privately talk to someone who's about to breach the civility rules, right? Mm-hmm. And it is a way for us to get to know each other a little bit better. Because it doesn't hurt if we know each other as individuals and not just as representatives of a group thought. Mm-hmm. Yes. So we're going to have some food. If we're going to have some food, we're going to take a survey. We're going to ask everyone to tell us if we have a food prohibition, an allergy, or some sort of food we simply don't eat, right? We're going to pass that information along. And when people bring food, we're going to ask them to bring a list of what is in it, not just what it's called, but what's in it, so I can run my eye down the list and know if I can eat it. We don't want anybody to have a bad time, right? And it's a convivial atmosphere. Also, I think everybody should have a safe recipe, one that everybody can eat, mm-hmm, with very familiar foods in it. My familiar foods might not be yours because this is an international show. For example, I would think of the curry would be an adventure recipe, because we don't have curry very much around here. Yeah. And an adventure recipe would be something that people would have to think about. But the bean casserole is a safe recipe, at least in my area. Mm-hmm. So what are we going to do? We're going to have a nice big onion. I like a sweet onion, like a Vidalia. We're going to chop it up. I'm going to use canned kidney beans and all the other kinds of canned beans. I confess this freely. If you want to soak them and like that, that's fabulous. Around here, beans come in a can. They are cheap. They are easily gotten. And it's just easier. So I'm going to do it. If you want to do the more organic thing, go for it. Yours will probably be better than mine. So we're going to have a can of kidney beans. We're going to use about, half cup of the beans. You don't need the whole can. I don't know how big your can is. But let's do about a half a cup of them. You know, for any of those beans you need, if they're in a can, they come in slime. I mean, let's face it. You need to rinse them off and drain them and get rid of any stray shells that are in there, the skins, so to speak. They're not hard. They're edible, but they're ugly, and they're not going to make your casserole nice. They're going to be kind of, ugh. So get rid of the, drain them, rinse them off because they've got slime, and get rid of any of the stray skins. We're going to have a cup of the red ones. We're going to have half a cup of the black beans of some sort, yes. Mm-hmm. And a half cup of chickpeas, those little white beans. Now, you don't have those kind of things on your grocery store. Just use three kinds of beans. Yes, whatever it is that you like that's available. You can make all one beans type. It will be not as pretty, okay, is what it really is. Do they all have different tastes? Kind of. They have different consistencies, right? Yeah, and the different shapes, which makes them different. People ask me about lima beans. Thinking about it, If they're the same consistency as the rest of the beans, I don't see why not. We don't usually see canned lima beans around here. We see frozen, which is kind of a different thing because they're harder. Okay, so those are our beans. We're going to have two zucchini. Going to chop them up. Yeah. Take off the ends. You don't want the ends in there. Let's have four nice big carrots. Also chop them up. Four tomatoes. I'm actually going to use real tomatoes with this because they chop up nice. You can use canned. If you do, you drain them real good. You know how we usually use the canned juice from the tomatoes because it's perfectly nice? Not this time. Give them a real good drain. Couple of celery stalks. Chop, chop. Let's use vegetable stock in this because it's kind of a vegetarian dish, right? Yeah. If you want to use chicken stock, but it depends if you need it to be vegetarian. Let's have about a cup and a quarter. We don't want it to be too wet because it's a casserole, but we don't want it to dry and kind of glop together. You've got to look at what you've got. A couple of tablespoons of tomato paste. That is our inside, right? Let's preheat an oven to about 350. We're going to put all that stuff together. Just mix it together. It's all pretty much pre-cooked, right? Yeah. Mix together the tomato paste and the stock so that it's not lumpy. You know what I mean? You put the stock and the tomato paste, whisk it around. Pour over all the vegetables, which you've mixed together. Let's put it in our oven about 15 minutes, just so it all gets hot and kind of melds together. Because you don't want to burn the topping and the bottom could use a little extra. Now we're going to put our crispy topping together. We're going to have 2 cups of breadcrumbs. I personally like flavored breadcrumbs. I like the Italian flavor. They come like that around here in kind of a canister. If you want to make your own, of course, that's up to you. But you know you need to be kind of toasty breadcrumbs. Let's have, if nobody is allergic to nuts, and we've checked this out very carefully, and we put it very big on the list. Could chop in, finely chop about a half a cup of some sort of delicious nuts. I do not favor peanuts because sometimes people are allergic and they don't realize. In my personal experience, almonds or pecans are usually very delicious, and most people like them. So a sweet nut like that. Yeah, and it is true. They're also not so terribly expensive. If you think maybe not, then leave the nuts out. And let's have a whole cup of cheese because I like cheese. Like Parmesan cheese, if you like cheddar cheese better, yum yum. We've got the warm, we're going to take our vegetables out of the oven, right? Yeah. And we've mixed together everything for the topping, right? And we've added the cheese also, mixed it together after we've mixed together the dry stuff, the nuts and the breadcrumbs. Then we mix in the cheese, right? You could leave out the nuts if you feel like it. Yeah, people are being worried about the nuts. We're going to now take our hot pan out of the oven, right? And our casserole dish. And we're going to put the topping on it. Sprinkle it. If you squish it down, it'll sink into the vegetables and make no topping. You'll just have soggy. So don't pat it down. Don't squish it down with a spoon. Just sprinkle it over the top so that it's kind of laying on top because your liquid's gone to the bottom anyhow, right? Right. Back in the oven, 30 minutes. Topping turns crispy. You're done. And it is fabulous. Everybody likes it. Yeah. Yeah, people are talking about the liquid. You could use, don't use more than a cup and a quarter. A cup really should do it. I don't like my casserole to be real loose, is what it really is. I err on the side of less liquid than on the side of more liquid, and that's the truth. Especially since your beans and stuff had some liquid to them, because you rinsed them off and they're kind of damp. Yeah. So anyway, that is our bean casserole, and we made it. We made it within our time, except that we're now out of time. Thank you so much, everyone, for being here. Yes, we will get to the second one, the herb lemon pork loin. You'll love it. We'll try to do it next time. That's our adventure recipe because it has pork. So, thank you all for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. If you would like to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you for all of your participation. Also, prior shows. Yes, they're archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you for your participation. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.